You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, October 6, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Tobias Franz, writing in the Jacobin on the Colombian peace accord that is not to be. May still be. Also on the program today, Barack Obama's approval rating at a new high. Perhaps no one more happy that Donald Trump is running.
Bigly.
The Fox implosion continues. It's difficult watching mommy and daddy fight, but not so much when you really don't particularly care for either one of them. Donald Trump, will he deliver the Senate to the Democrats? There's still plenty of time, and we're going to have a better sense after Sunday night. Meanwhile, Paul Ryan announces his plan to pass his agenda in the event Donald Trump wins. I know this runs contrary to the narrative of some folks who don't know anything about anything. But Paul Ryan is now spelling it out for you with a chalkboard. Mass protests. Stop Poland's abortion ban proposal. And Gary Johnson going for the gold. Just in case there's anybody left in this country who thinks Gary Johnson has done even the de minimis amount of reading, research, or whatever you would call it, to prepare for being president. He wants to make it absolutely clear he's done none of that.
Yeah, no, man, I don't know. Just to clarify again, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
He's actually, I wouldn't be surprised if he starts literally running an ad that
takes knowing stuff to do bad stuff.
There you go.
Think about it.
In fact, I've decided to stick a hot poker into my eye so that I can stop that part of my brain that would even allow me to even talk about stuff.
One less eye, less stuff to see and know about and then do bad things. Logic.
We got a new Secretary General at the UN, and some wonderful testimony from the Chris Christie trial today, or yesterday, I should say, as that wraps up.
I walked into it this morning.
Oh, so fantastic. So fantastic. Are we streaming okay or anything? Folks, we are what, like six people away from getting to 100,000 subscribers on YouTube?
48.
Well, all right, whatever. Jeez, so precise. So check it out. I was on Haze two times last week. Literally, I have people now tweeting at me. Oh, Cedar's got to shave again. Good news. And then they at Harry's. Razor. And it's funny because it's true. The only time I shave now, like who knows? These things don't last forever. But I am, one of the things I'm looking forward to is that time where I don't do any TV and I never have to shave. I'll grow a beard, but then it gets too itchy and then it's all sorts of problems. But people know by now that I love Harry's. Big part of it for me, the price. I'm not going to lie. Although, I will say, there was something that they just did at Harry's recently. I don't know if they have this in the copy at all, but what they did is they made their razors a little bit narrower. And that means I can actually hook it around my nose. Is this a problem that most people have?
No.
All right, well, I do.
Jew.
No, maybe that's why. I wasn't sure if it's like just like specifically the my nostrils or whatever it is.
Oh, my find nose.
A narrower blade makes it easier for me to get into, you know, specifically, I'm just talking right there. I don't know. Maybe there's other places too. But Harry's has a 5-blade razor, softer flex hinge for a more comfortable glide, a lubricating strip, and a textured handle, which gives you more control when it's wet. I guess people sometimes shave in the shower. You do that, I guess, if you're shaving your legs.
That happens.
Still, just $2 a blade compared to 4 or more that you'll pay at the drugstore. Check this out now. They have a new deal. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they'll send you their popular free trial set, which comes with a razor, 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. You get that for free when you set up for a shave plan. You just pay for shipping. So the shave plan is it just basically you set it, you forget it, and they send you new blades every month or so. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the Majority Report. If you enter the code Majority Report at checkout, you get a post-shave balm added to your order for free. Yeah. I gotta actually.
They take care of our people very well.
Oh yeah, they've been very great. Everybody in here is fully harried up, razored up.
Yes.
Go to harrys.com right now. Enter the code Majority Report at checkout to claim your free trial set and post shave balm. That's harrys.com. Code is Majority Report. I have to play this. We're gonna get to Tobias in a minute, but I have to play this. This clip from Donald Trump. He was in Nevada, right? And I rarely say it correctly, but I don't know if I'll ever say it incorrectly again. Now, understand, I'm from Massachusetts. So whenever I see anything that is like my go-to, even if it's A-R, is ah. So I say Nevada.
Dude.
But apparently it's Nevada. Now, how will I remember this? Because the world's perhaps most arrogant man is pronunciation shaming his audience and other people and trying to show how he knows how to say Nevada. And every time I say Nevada, I get IMs and people get bummed. And I will concede I'm a little bit bad with pronunciation. Here's a guy who will not concede it. Even as he's giving people a lesson in how not to say Nevada.
Heroin overdoses are surging and meth overdoses in Nevada. Nevada. And you know what I said? You know what I said? I said when I came out here, I said, nobody says it the other way. It has to be Nevada. Right? And if you don't say it correctly, and it didn't happen to me, but it happened to a friend of mine. He was killed.
He loves the feeling of air rushing through his teeth when he is making an ass of himself.
It was amazing. It was. I remember that time my friend was murdered in Copeland.
Because you know what's happening?
Mispronouncing the name of his state.
You know what's happening right now is the people in the audience, because he's in Nevada, are saying, no, Nevada! And he's going, yeah, I know, Nevada.
Yeah, I got it.
You don't say it the other way, Nevada.
So anyways, a bunch of losers here having heroin overdoses. Anyways, it brings me to a great anecdote about the pronunciation of your state.
I'm so empathetic about the problems that you're dealing with. Oh, let me tell you this funny story about how I can pronounce the name of this state. Unbelievable. So here's the latest thing that my kids are fighting about now in my house. I mentioned we got a Casper mattress for Saul. It was the first big boy mattress, or I guess you could say big girl. I mean, really, it doesn't have to be gender specific. The mattresses are not gendered. We told him, you're getting into a big boy bed now. And we picked up a twin size mattress for Saul. $500 came in a box. And you release it. Everybody enjoyed that. I don't know how they do that, but they send it to your house or your apartment. You get to keep it for 100 nights. Completely risk-free to see if you like it. We knew within like a couple of days it was not going to be a problem. The biggest problem we have now with our Casper mattress, honestly, Mila is demanding one. Everybody, Nikki sleeps better on it. We all fall asleep when we read in books. It's a bit of a problem. But if you don't love it, they come and pick it up. They refund you everything. Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create what is an award-winning sleep surface. Has just the right sink, just the right bounce. Apparently, Time Magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. Free shipping and returns to the U.S., and not just the U.S., and Canada. You can try it for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they pick it up for you. Made in America. Casper has a special offer for members of this, or I should say listeners of this program. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/majority. That's casper.com/majority and using the offer code majority. Terms and conditions apply. And don't blame me if you get in a fight because you haven't bought enough for everybody in your family. We're going to end up having to get one from Mila. There's no doubt.
Ray Gunn is going to end up blaming you for this somehow.
That dude was complaining to me on Twitter about having a kid.
Well, there you go. So when he follows you down the Casper route and he has a second kid that you've also co-signed on.
All right, let's just cover this briefly. Ted Cruz is on, I don't know, his Make Amends tour. This is the most... Now, I mean, to be fair, Chris Christie has probably been the most humiliated over the course of this campaign. But Ted Cruz seems to be wanting to race to the front of this. I don't understand what's going on here. It's one thing, like, not only has Ted Cruz endorsed Donald Trump, despite the fact that he called his wife ugly and said that his dad was responsible for, or at least involved in, the assassination of
Crazy
JFK.
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Which, by the way, was a compliment. I mean, did they kill Kennedy or not?
It was
a
success.
His
dad
did a great job. I mean, I think presidential assassinations are a big deal.
Do you remember how tough Ted Cruz was? Like, Donald's a coward.
Yeah. I'm going to paraphrase bad mid-90s romantic comedies now in defense of my wife.
He was a coward. Well, here is Ted Cruz, and it's not even like, it's one thing to record a robocall for somebody. Oh, I guess. It's another thing
Hello.
To have audio, yeah, exactly, of calling on behalf of Donald Trump. Well, they have a video that they have released of Ted Cruz sadly calling. I don't even know if he's getting people on the phone, just leaving a message. And not only that, they have a camera angle that so that they get the Trump Pence posters in the background, and he just looks, it's like, it's almost as if Trump was sitting there just going like, okay, yeah, no, this doesn't make him look ugly enough. Bring the camera down, shoot up into his nose.
Oh yeah, it's like auteur Trump. Wait a second, I want the
this
light.
This is the perfect mise-en-scene. Now, here's what I want, Ted. I want you to think about me with your wife. Make the call. Action. Here it is.
Hi, this is Ted Cruz calling. I was calling to encourage you to come out and vote on Election Day. This election is critical for the direction of our country, and I urge you to come out and support freedom and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. You can vote by absentee ballot, and if you need help getting an application for an absentee ballot, the Republican Party of Texas can help you with that. or you can vote in person. But I just wanted to encourage you to come out and vote. Thank you, and God bless you.
There it is. Oh, poor Ted.
Never thought I'd feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Look at this poor son of a bitch.
I don't feel bad for him. So, Nikki now has a movement watch. Have you heard of this?
I have.
It is, I mean, this is, I guess, the big thing now. You do it online, and people are actually creating products online to cut out the middlemen. I know these guys did it, I think, through Indiegogo, right? Was it? Or they did some crowdfunding. There were two college kids, came out, apparently were broke. They wanted to wear stylish watches. They couldn't afford them, so they started their own watch company. I mean, I guess in a way, that's why I did this podcast. I couldn't, I didn't hear anybody who wasn't saying anything that was ridiculous. So I started my own podcast. That's
cut out the middleman.
I think I just wanted to talk. That was a big part of it.
I want to talk, so I'll cut out the
middleman. So I got Nikki the Silver Pearl. And the Silver Pearl cost $125. Most of the watches start at $95. $125 is high end. When I gave her the watch, she somehow got the notion that I had spent about four times that. She thought that. I did not dissuade her. I'm not suggesting that you lie to people.
She won't discover it because she doesn't listen to you on the show.
That's absolutely right.
That's great stuff.
Exactly. Movement figured out by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price for very stylish, high-quality watches. She has already gotten multiple compliments. She's like more businessy than I am. She goes out. I'm not a big watch person. I'm excited the fact that I'm still wearing shorts and it's October. But Nikki goes out and actually presents herself well. Classic designs, quality construction, and styled minimalism. They've sold over 500,000 watches in over 160 countries. And now, today, you can get 15% off with free shipping and free returns. I mean, there's no risk involved in this. By going to MVMTWatches.com/majority. That's MVMTWatches.com/majority. The watch has a really clean design, and like I say, Nikki is incredibly excited by the watch, wears it all the time, and it makes her look, I don't know, I mean, it makes her look like she's a grown-up, as opposed to wearing shorts in October. Go to MVMTWatches.com/majority. Now is the time to step up your watch game. Join the movement. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We come back. Tobias Franz is a PhD student at the SOAS, University of London. And we're going to talk about the Columbia Peace Accord. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Tobias Franz. He is a PhD student at the School of Oriental and African Studies in London, studying political economy approaches to institutional change and development with a particular focus on Latin America. His piece, The Ends of Peace, in the Jacobin last week anticipated the referendum on the Colombian peace agreement between the Colombian government and FARC, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. Tobias, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for having me.
So in your piece, you had anticipated that the peace agreement would pass the referendum. It didn't. Before we get to that, let's go back and walk us through, the history of and the sort of, I guess, the dynamics here that led us to at the end of a 4-year process, peace negotiations between the government and FARC. I mean, just go back for us. What was the how did FARC begin?
Yeah, I mean, the rejection of the peace treaty. We can come to that in a bit. Yeah, but like most of. Most of the people, I was really, really surprised that it was rejected, and also quite sad and shocked, to be honest, but we'll get to that in a bit. Yeah, to have a bit of a context of the conflict, maybe, it started off in the 40s with an assassination of a popular presidential candidate, but also largely around questions of distribution of land, of economic and political marginalization of the rural population, and the FARC was the main voice sort of against the Colombian government, which was represented by sort of the landed oligarchy of the country that has largely controlled the country for centuries, and sort of the more urban industrialists, and sort of was contesting, the FARC was contesting that highly inequality in the country. But then we also saw in the 1980s quite a significant change in Colombia, not only the FARC being one of the contestors of this oligarchy, but also a drug elite, if you will. I mean, you famously know Pablo Escobar displayed in the recent Netflix hit Narcos. But really importantly as well, we saw then a rise in the 1980s of politicians that had and proven now close ties to Pablo Escobar. For example, now ex-president and senator Álvaro Uribe, who really came to political power and economic influence with the narco money behind him, but also sort of institutional backing of some of the sections of the Colombian elite. And he became president in 2002, which sort of constitutes the pinnacle of power of these narco-capitalists and their sort of neoliberalized economic model that is constantly then underwritten by cocaine capital and capitalized. And so we saw that a quite confrontational war was waged against the FARC. Personal interests of this ex-president, Álvaro Uribe, were at play. His father was assassinated and killed by the FARC, but also obviously economic interests of driving land prices down to acquire land more cheaply, but also to have sort of his paramilitary sort of comrades and right-wing factions of the elite to control the drug trafficking more easily, because obviously the FARC had become by then a big player in the narco industry, and after he wasn't allowed to run in 2010 again, he sort of put his personal Dimitri Medvedev, if you will, up front, President Santos, who is now president. However, it turned out to be a bit different than with Medvedev in Russia, but because Santos sort of turned against his former sort of leader. Also, Santos represents more of the traditional lead, and then embarked on the peace.
Tobias, hold on before we move in. Tobias, hold on before we move into Uribe and Santos or that transition. Just going back a little bit. So you have the FARC fighting primarily in the rural areas of Colombia. Is that right? And then where did the right wing paramilitaries come in? I mean, what was the vacuum that created the space for them? As opposed to, let's say, I mean, was it because the government wasn't there, or is it just because of the tremendous amount of chaos that was sort of characterized Colombia at that time?
Yeah. To some extent, the FARC has been always controlling sort of the rural areas of Colombia, yeah, mostly in the south, but also on the borders of Venezuela. And some part of the north as well, but largely, they are a rural phenomenon. The paramilitary and sort of right-wing factions came in as sort of a two-way strategy. One was to sort of, they were financed by all elite factions in the 80s to fight against, the FARC, and also the, for example, Pablo Escobar and his sort of Medellin cartel was also financed not just by the elite, but also then later on by the United States government, who then obviously tried to get rid of Pablo Escobar afterwards. But they came in at a time where Colombia had been industrialized, where there was big economic crises in the late 80s, devaluation of the peso, etc., that left quite a lot of people, especially then in urban areas, unemployed, and the continuous war in the rural areas that have displaced over 6 million people in Colombia since the 40s. This urbanization of sort of displaced rural, poor, working class people then became a sort of ground where narco capitalism was flourishing on, but also where then the paramilitary became a large player, mostly in cities as well, but also in the rural areas to sort of protect landed wealth against the FARC. So this is where the paramilitary came in.
And it seems like regardless of I mean, all these players, obviously the narcos, but I guess the sort of just the pure narcos, and then the FARC and these right wing paramilitaries, they all seem to basically engage in the narcotics trade as just sort of a revenue, right? I mean, everybody needed a revenue stream. Some were just doing it strictly for the money. Others were doing it to raise money for a political agenda. Is it, I mean, do I have that right?
More or less. That's at least sort of the line that the FARC has been trying to maintain, that ultimately they do that for political agenda. And I had the pleasure to also meet some of the leadership that were negotiating at some point, and also to raise this point with them. But to be honest, especially since the 90s, that has not really been the case. The FARC has increasingly lost its political agenda to bring about change through revolution, and have increasingly become just another player in the Colombian narcotics industry. So I would say maybe at the beginning, maybe in the 80s, that was still true. But then the more also it became a competition between military forces, paramilitary forces, and the FARC about who to control, also the legacy then of Pablo Escobar's drug trade, I think it became largely about the trade and about the money behind it. And that's also why a lot of people in Colombia have lost complete trust in anything that the FARC would say, because also another income source has been the kidnapping of people and sort of hurting the community through drug trade violence, but also through the kidnapping. And so I think politically the FARC have, to some extent, lost a bit of their agenda in the 90s and early 2000s, definitely.
So we have Uribe essentially seeks to place Santos in as president, or at least gives him his imprimatur, and Santos turns out to be not the guy Uribe thought he was. He's an aristocrat who is looking, or I should say, an oligarch who's looking to forge a peace with the FARC. Tell us about what the deal, what was in this peace deal. And it's interesting to me because I know part of it was a sort of a political assimilation of the FARC, which, I mean, strikes me as, I don't know if strange is the right word, but it runs up against the notion that they had sort of lost their political reason for being. And you know what I mean? I mean, it would be the functional equivalent of saying we're going to let just some narcos in and have positions in parliament, despite the fact they don't necessarily represent a distinct political ideology anymore.
Yes, to some extent we have, with Uribe and his party, a lot of proven, you know, legally proven people that have had links, including Álvaro Uribe, with sort of paramilitary, sort of parapolitica scandal in the early or mid 2000s that erupted. So we do have actually the paramilitary sitting in Senate and the House of Representatives in Colombia, but.
Tobias, can I ask you just to pull back on your phone just a little bit, because it's a little bit difficult. It's getting a little bit muffled. Just pull back a little bit on your phone.
Sorry. Is that better?
I think so, a little bit.
Okay. But there is still, to some extent, a political wing that of the FARC, especially the people that were in Havana negotiating with the government, and there is still some interest in the Colombian society to bring about change through sort of civil society and political means rather than through the armed conflict. So we do still have that. This is definitely a case. What was in the negotiation or in the peace deal was on the one hand a rural reform, sort of a land reform, which was, you know, the origin of the whole conflict to some extent, but also, demobilization of the FARC through specific zones. They would be, you know, put there as transition zones to be reintegrated in society. But also, and that was one thing which we can also come back to, they were guaranteed some political representation in the House of Representatives. They were guaranteed 10 seats, which is an equivalent of 5%, no matter if they win any votes in the elections or not. That was sort of the deal. Then a decriminalization of the illicit of harvesting illicit crops, because of the fact that it is not just used for cocaine production, but also traditional reasons. But also, that was one of the major things, and that swung the vote as well to some extent to the yes vote, at least one thought so, was the recognition and reparation for victims. For the first time ever did both sides say, all right, there were victims in this conflict, we're sorry, and we need to, you know, repair that, give them money, give them some sort of representation. And that was something that was really that was really progressive for the first time ever to have that recognized.
Who would have paid that? In other words, why couldn't the government have unilaterally provided reparations?
No, that was the deal that the government would pay the financial means to it, but also that the FARC would acknowledge, because until today, until the day of the negotiation, they had not acknowledged even that they had cost victims that were innocent victims. They also always thought, you know, that these are casualties that is normal, that happen in every war, so that not victims. And for the first time ever, they acknowledged in the negotiation, in that peace deal, that, you know, they are responsible for humanitarian victims and humanitarian crimes.
So ultimately, what I mean, it was a very close vote. Literally, I think thousands out of 13 million votes, tens of thousands of votes. The peace deal was rejected. What explains that in your opinion?
Well, it's hard to say what exactly was the ultimate reason. There's maybe a few factors that contributed to it. To one extent, the turnout was extremely low. There was 60% of the population that abstained, which is the lowest turnout, I think, in 20, 25 years, and a warning as well to a lot of people, I guess, also in the States. What happens is if you think something will win anyway, and it's not necessarily that you have to go out and actually vote for or against something, especially young people didn't go out to vote on that Sunday. There was a big hurricane that happened as well, Matthew, that led to floods in some areas and people couldn't go to vote. That also was one reason why it's so low. Another factor is, and that a highly desensitized population, especially in cities where the war has just been absent for years. And then you saw that in cities especially, we had a rejection of the deal, whereas in rural areas where you have actually the conflict still going on, and in some areas where there was the most casualties of this conflict, you had a 96% for the yes vote. And that is something that is quite interesting to see, that actually the most affected areas voted for the peace deal, and sort of the desensitized population that can just switch off the TV and sort of forget about this war is still going on, voted against it. And the reason for that all is because we have in Colombia an own brand of, let's say, egocentric, hyper-masculine politicians. We own Donald Trump with Alvaro Uribe and others and other ex-presidents that have opposed that. And they've used this insecurity amongst the government, amongst the population, the general distrust in the FARC, but also Santos has a extremely low approval rates. So they use this to feed lies to the public openly now. Today, one of the leaders of the No campaign openly said, all right, we did that on purpose. We tried to feed lies through social media, similar to also what happens with Trump, with Boris Johnson, with Nigel Farage in Brexit, when it came to Brexit. This is a point where the population was really, you know, lied to. And this is also part of the reason is that you see the phenomenon in Colombia, similar to, let's say, Fox News, but also in the United Kingdom, of sort of the post-truth media, if you will, that didn't really reject these lies, but disseminated them further and spread them even further. Also because of one of the major national TV stations is owned by Ardila Lula, a guy that rejected the peace deal. So this was also something that that I think is underestimated, how much the far right still has influence in the society in Colombia. Also, others said,
go ahead,
that the FARC apologies were too little too late, and were rejecting the fact that they got guaranteed these 10 seats. But also, that it was just too late for them to actually, you know, acknowledge their apologies. We also saw some people in the far left and actually in the village where the FARC started in 64, we also had a rejection, actually. And there are people saying we don't really trust the government to actually protect us. We want to, you know, maintain with our arms because in the past we tried to demobilize and put our arms down. What happened is tens of thousands of people actually that did that and that were FARC supporters got them assassinated in the early 80s, in the late 80s, sorry. So this is also something that sort of happened, but I think that is more of a small margin of the far left that we want to remain armed to protect ourselves.
And so what happens now? I mean, a week ago, my understanding is there were hundreds of kilograms of explosives that were detonated that the FARC gave up. You already had the outgoing UN Secretary General and John Kerry visit Colombia to hail this agreement, obviously somewhat prematurely. What happens now from the perspective of somebody who voted against this peace accord because they didn't I guess there's a myriad of reasons, like you've explained, but if one of them is I don't want the FARC to have gotten anything from this, from their perspective, it's like, well, this was sort of not quite a full-on ambush, but we got them to demilitarize. We've got them demoralized on some level. That, you know, they've got to go back into the jungle now, essentially, or back into fighting. What does happen now? I mean, is the FARC going to be able to sort of maintain this after they had already sort of come to this, you know, sort of broad-based, I guess, sense that their war was over?
That is actually, it's an interesting thing to see because of the fact that the FARC are militarily, politically, economically at its weakest point in history. And they did, after that rejected, they did come up out right away and said they're committed to the peace deal, they're committed to the bilateral ceasefire, to which then the president right away also said, all right, he stays committed to it, to the ceasefire and to the peace deal. And also the FARC saying, yeah, actually, legally, this peace deal should hold because both sides did sign it. It's just not politically that it holds, so we can just continue doing what we wanted to do. Upon which then 40 hours after the vote, Sanchez then came out, obviously also trying to pressure the FARC into some sort of weaker position and potential renegotiation, saying, all right, but we only will hold up the ceasefire until the 31st of October. So putting a deadline to sort of until the 31st of October, we will need a new agreement or otherwise we might go back to war with you. To which then the FARC commanded their troops to as we say, go back into the jungle, go back to sort of secure locations, as they put it in their tweets, and not be provoked by any of these, you know, messages that come forward. But it is hard to say what will actually happen next. There was talk about a constitutional assembly that was then rejected. Then, for the first time in 6 years, actually, Uribe and Santos met. So for Uribe, this is already one of the biggest successes in his life. He's back on a big political agenda on the big stage. Was invited to the presidential palace yesterday and made obviously a big show out of it all. And he actually then came out and said, all right, we can do a new deal. we can get amnesty to the lower rank and file, but let's have the leaders of the FARC, you know, arrested, etc. But that was always part of the deal. So it might be suggested that he actually never read the actual peace agreement, but was just buying into this rhetoric of lying about it. So I think part of the danger of this political play is that this is played out as long as possible, because there will be election at the end of next year in Colombia, and obviously Uribe is trying to put his candidate forward again to say only with him will there be a real peace. And so there might be a bit of a quagmire until end of next year. There might be a
to be clear, can Uribe,
this month, it's really hard to tell.
To be clear, can Uribe run again, or is his term limits done for life? Is it just a matter of him supporting a candidate of his, political, faction?
Yeah, it's similar to sort of the United States. He can run twice, and he had his two terms between 2002 and 2010, and he then put Santos forward, who won. But then his last candidate from his party lost 3 years ago. And yeah, he can only put a new candidate forward that might come from sort of his political agenda. Yeah.
So I guess we will have a little bit more clarity by the end of this month. Tobias Franz,
yeah.
Thank you so much. The Jacobin piece is The Ends of Peace. It is... we will link to that Jacobin piece at majority.fm. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. We've got a couple of stories, including the latest testimony from the Chris Christie trial. This Colombian story is pretty amazing, because there was such, it seems to me, broad-based assumption that this would be adopted. I mean, let's hope these things don't come in threes.
Well, these are plebiscites, not elections, so maybe.
Fair enough.
If you don't want to be superstitious about it. But I think, the FARC is saying that they're going to keep the deal going. So,
they're cornered.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're still pretty tightly organized. They still have a fair amount of weapons. So, but yeah, they're pretty cornered.
Well,
it's terrible.
I guess I'll just keep watching Narcos to find out how this all ends. All right, folks, 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. Folks, it's your support that makes this program possible. We rely on our members becoming members to support this program. And you can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. It is pennies a day. It is easy to do. You get access to all our archives. We had a little bit of problem on the app. In terms of the archives, that's been fixed. People can, if they're still having problems, sign back in. If you're still having a problem, email us at members@majority.fm. But you get access to, what is it? What have we been doing this show now for 6 years? Holy crap. It's almost 6 years to the day. It's really close, I think, right? I started this like in October 2010, I think it was. So if you're a member, you have access to 1,500 shows, and it's searchable. And when we get our website going, Kelly, people will be able to search it, the archives, much easier by topic, by names, by tags, all that type of stuff. But what's that? Oh, did we get there? Kelly has an announcement, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we have gone over 100,000.
Hold on. Okay, wait a second. Go ahead. Try it again.
Okay. We've gone over 100,000.
One second. Go ahead, try it. One
What about Shofar?
What is it? Okay. Oh, yeah. It's Russian. Okay, let's try it one more time. What is the announcement, Kelly?
We have reached
Hold
our
on
goal.
One second. Kelly has some breaking news.
We have reached our goal of 100,000 subscribers.
On YouTube.
Now we just need everyone to keep watching the videos and also become members.
Yes, enjoy. We're going to put out our bedazzling party video soon.
Sure to be ahead.
Yes. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. If you don't like the ads that we have on this program, we don't have ads a lot, but when we do, sometimes today we had a bunch. You become a member. That's all ad-free. We cut out the ads on the member show. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon or Jet.com, do so at MajorityReportKickback.com. Going to take a quick break. We'll take some phone calls, 646-257-3920. We'll take your IMs. We'll be right back. Oh, my God. Is it Thursday already? Cliff Schechter will be here tomorrow. We'll be right back after this.